Welcome to Actors 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith, and today we're going to be talking to an amazing person in the industry. He's an actor. He's a producer, director, cinematographer, editor, second unit director, assistant director, casting department, production manager. But most important, he is a real actor with a lot of credits. He's the real deal. But what we're going to be talking about in this particular episode is self-taping. What is self-taping? Why do you need it? How do you do it? Let's get all the info, the 411, from Mr. Tim Powell. Let's give him a call right now and let's see what he has to offer you. And here we go.
This is Tim Powell.
Hey, Tim, it's Johnny Keith from Actors 2020 Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Awesome. So I was at the SAG-AFTRA building the other day, caught your two-hour workshop. Very impressed. Sold out crowd, standing room only. It was pretty amazing. You taught me a lot in just a two-short-hour period about self-taping.
That's great, man. Glad to hear it. I do that workshop about once a month. I do that over at SAG, but I've done it a lot of other places as well.
I always do a lot of research on there, and I was just thinking, hey, this would be great to give a lesson on self-taping, but you as an actor, you have a very amazing story, a nice, impressive career.
Oh, thanks, man. It's all about the journey.
Before we get to that, let's just get right to it. Self-taping. What is it? Why do you need it? How do you do it?
Self-taping has become pretty much standard practice now. There was a time when it didn't happen. I think you may remember, I talk about this in the workshop. I lived in the Southeast. I was working out of Orlando, but a lot of my work was in Atlanta or New Orleans or Miami. And we used to have to get in the car and drive 6.5 hours to Atlanta, go in, do your audition, get back in the car, drive 6.5 hours or 11 hours to New Orleans or 9 hours to Wilmington, North Carolina. And several of us actors in the Southeast got together and started petitioning kind of casting directors in the Southeast to accept tapes from them. Mm-hmm. And they were very reluctant at first. But I had a production company for about 12 years and I had facilities and I started bringing people in and we would put people on, at first, VHS tapes. So I would buy cases of 5 and 10 minute VHS tapes and we would put several auditions on one tape and FedEx it up to the casting director. And then that kind of evolved into mini DV tapes.
Right.
And then DVDs. And then finally, with the advent of high speed internet and compression, we were able to send files. And it's become pretty much standard. Like when I first moved to Los Angeles, most of the audition uploads I was doing were to agents and casting directors in the Southeast, and then and sometimes New York and sometimes London and other places. But I've noticed over the past few years, more and more and more, we're shooting stuff. I'm taping people locally for local uploads. I've booked series regulars out of my studio space. I mean, I had a girl who came in and booked a nice role on This Is Us.
Wow.
Not too long ago.
So nice.
Off of a self-tape. So casting directors are realizing they can save a lot of money if they don't have to rent a space, hire a session runner, get actors to come and show up on time, which is a big problem in this town, and they save a lot of money.
So basically, you're the godfather of self-taping.
I'd like to think so, but I'm sure I wasn't the only person who was doing it. But for a while, it was what we did in the Southeast, and like when people would read for stuff out here, I was uploading tapes to LA casting directors probably 15 to maybe even 20 years ago.
Right, so just tell us about that real quick.
I mean, just to preface that, I had a production company for about 12 years. I produced mostly what we called then non-broadcast industrial. I think they call it corporate video now. So it's like training for your employees on your website or showing people around the website kind of thing. And I got to work with a lot of good cinematographers and gaffers and whatever. And so I was in a position, because I was hiring these people, that during the lag moments, I'd go, you know, why are you using that lens? And why is that light there? And what does that do? And they were always usually happy to share that information with me. And I'm happy to share it with other people too. Lighting is such a critical thing. You know, when you think about your camera or your smartphone, and I highly recommend people shoot on their smartphone, it's basically a device which is capturing reflected light. So it's also working in a two-dimensional space. So how do you make it look like it's three-dimensional? How do you make it more vivid and more real? And the way you do that is by using something that's called three-point lighting, which has been standard in the lighting industry for decades. And you have a key light, which is the brightest light, which shines on one side of the actor's face from up above. above at a 45-degree angle. That creates shadows on the other side. So you add a fill light to fill in the shadows that the key light creates. And then you pop it out from the background by using, pop your subject out from the background by using a backlight that falls on the back of the head and shoulders. All of these lights are coming in from a 45-degree angle. The key light is the brightest light. The fill light is half as bright as the key light. And the backlight can vary depending on hair color or whether you even have hair. If I'm bald, I can't shine a light on the back of my head without looking like I'm about to leave my body. So I drop it down on my shoulders. But that backlight pops you out. And so the simple formula is this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So key light is 1, fill light is 2, backlight is 3, and they all come in at a 45-degree angle. So if you can count to 5, you can do 3-point lighting.
Right. I was trying to do that, and I was standing too close to my back wall. I only had like a foot and a half, and that was my problem. I needed to be like 3 to 4 feet away from my backdrop. I couldn't get the backlight. It was weird. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, well, the way you figure that out is if your light's coming in from the front at a 45-degree angle, the shadow is going to drop down at a 45-degree angle. So you need to step far enough away from your background,
right,
or your backdrop, that the shadows fall down below your waist. And it doesn't matter if they're there, really, but if you're right up against it, the shadow's going to be right there behind you, and you don't need that. And you can't get, like you said, you can't get the backlight in there.
And that's just one of Tim's top 10 self-tape tips. I can't do it. You do it.
I know. I have to come up with another name for that. It's become kind of a joke.
I practice so hard.
Because every time I say it, I could say the top 10 or the tech tips or whatever, but it has to be Tim's top 10 self-tape tech tips. So, and you can download a free copy of that, by the way. Any of your listeners are welcome to go to auditionsup.com, and you can download a copy of my top 10 self-tape tech tips. And if you just follow that formula, it's going to improve your self-tapes 100%.
Yeah. I just downloaded it yesterday. It's pretty freaking awesome. Say you're on the set, you're in the hotel room, you're shooting the next day. All of a sudden, you get a call and someone needs a self-tape. In the hotel room, what do you do?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been there. I have been there many times. It seems like it's a rule of thumb. I was flying to the Southeast last year to shoot the series for PBS called Mercy Street. And as soon as I got off the plane, my phone started blowing up and I had 2 auditions that I had to get. This was actually when I went for the callback. So I was just going to go do the callback, get back on a plane and fly back. But I had a deadline for both these auditions. So it's like, what do I do?
Right.
So I got in the hotel room and I realized there was a sheer blind white sheet kind of blinds on the window. So that light was coming through, was really soft. So I decided to use that as my key light. And then there was a floor lamp, and I took the lampshade off of that and then put a pillowcase in front of it.
That's good.
So that became my fill light. And then there was a mirror on the back of the bathroom door that could reflect the fill light and work kind of like a backlight.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I've never made this mistake since. I always carry an adapter for my smartphone now, but I had to use my suitcase handle and some duct tape and a coat hanger to get my iPhone where I needed it to shoot that audition. And I got through it, but it was a hassle. So now I carry a smartphone adapter and a small tripod with me when I travel, just in case that happens again. If you're shooting on your smartphone, if you're framing it just head and shoulders, the phone is going to be close enough to you that you don't have to use an external microphone. It's always better to use an external microphone so you can isolate the actor's voice. And then the biggest problem that you find with self-tapes is finding a reader. That can be difficult in a hotel. What I ended up doing in that case was I had a friend and I called him on the phone, had him read the sides to me. He sent the sides to me. I took out all of my lines and put empty spaces there. So I was playing back my iPad, the audio track that he sent me, and I was reading in the spaces where my lines go. The absolute best thing to do is always get a live reader who knows what they're doing. And if you're on a set, if you're working with someone, you can usually find one of the other actors you're working with. They'll be glad to work with you. I mean, I have a friend who's a much higher caliber actor than I am, but he's actually had production people go, yeah, I'll shoot your self-tape for you while you're here. And so they shoot it there, or somebody at the hotel. Usually there's several actors staying at a hotel. And I have done this, actually, working on that same project in the Southeast in Virginia. One of the actors there said, I've got a self-tape. Can you help me? And I went, yeah, come to my hotel room. And he came to the hotel room. We did our best we could to make it a 3-point lighting situation and shot him on cell phone and edited it on my Mac and sent it off to his agent right right away.
That's pretty cool. Well, talk about slating, because in your class, kind of heard two different things, and you kind of cleared it up about slating before, slating after, or slating as the character. Can you talk about slating?
Well, over the years, and I've taped thousands of auditions, but simple rules for slating is this. If they don't ask for a slate, don't give them one, unless you just want to. But sometimes a slate can mess up what you've done. If they say slate, but they don't specify slate first, put it at the end of your audition, right? So if they don't ask for one, don't give them one. If they ask for one, put it at the end, unless they say slate first. You have to be very careful. I see lots and lots of breakdowns, and they ask for some of the most bizarre things sometimes in the slate. So you have to be very careful to give them exactly what they ask for. And it might be something as simple as your name, but sometimes they want name, height, location, availability for work dates. The one that drives me crazy, I don't understand, is that there's several casting directors in the Southeast who want you to print out a piece of paper that has your name, your phone number, the best contact number, your agent's name, and whatever on a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and hold it under your chin like it's a mugshot. And I don't understand that, because they have all that information at access if they're getting the tape from the agent anyway. But sometimes they want you to hold that up and say what's on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll print out two copies, put one underneath the camera for the person to read, because sometimes it's 5 or 6 things they have to remember.
Yeah, I saw that on your website.
Right. And if they see somebody they like, they want that information. There's a lot of things. There are not a lot of conventions in this. Everybody wants files named a different name. Everybody has a different size file that they will accept. Can't be more than 100 megabytes. I had one casting director in Miami who kept insisting that nothing be over 25 megabytes. Try to do that when you're sending a high-def file. It's kind of difficult to do. I mean, it can be done, but it doesn't look great. But you can do it. Yeah.
Right. And these are all the technical things that you can learn on his website, or if you take one of his classes at SAG. And you said you were teaching at the AFI. My wife and I just joined. I hadn't been members in a while, and it seems like they're more sophisticated. I think they even have a self-taping room up there. Can you tell us a little bit about AFI?
I'm part of the SAG-AFTRA Conservatory. I was on their steering committee for 4 years, and now I just teach. And there are several other really good teachers who teach classes. And if you're a member, if you're a SAG-AFTRA member, you can join the conservatory for about $45 a year, I think. And that gives you access to all these classes. And there are workshops, classes, panel discussions with casting directors and agents. There's a wealth of information available to you through the conservatory. I'm one of those people. I teach a class twice a month up there called Technology and Minimalism. I teach actors where television came from, how it worked on a technical level, from CRT picture tubes all the way up to OLEDs and how those work, how your image is captured onto and converted into digital information and then exported back out to a viewing screen of some kind. I explain how all that works. And then what's happening is, as the technology gets higher and higher and higher resolution, the subtitle for my class is On Camera Acting in 8K. But as the resolution gets higher, you have to do less and less. You have to let the hardware do the heavy lifting. Many acting teachers say, let the camera come to you. Let the camera find you. So because the resolution is so high, you can see everything, every pore, every hair on your face, every little micro facial expression you make. I joke with my students that we're at the point now with the kind of high resolution that we're shooting that we can see your emotional scars are visible on your face. So I work with actors and help them bring it down, relate, and be present. And let the hardware do the heavy lifting.
Right. And at the AFI, you can also get into doing some of those student films to get a tape on yourself.
Oh, that's right. The next generation of Spielbergs are coming from the American Film Institute. It's one of the most renowned film schools on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're partnered with the Screen Actors Guild and SAG-AFTRA through the conservatory. If you join the conservatory, you have access to iActor, and you can put your profile up there just like you do on Actors Access or LA Casting. But that is the talent pool from which they choose talent for their film. So if you think about it, these people are paying in excess of $50,000 a year to be there. They've got state-of-the-art equipment, and they're there to become the next Spielberg. They're going to do the best quality work they can, and you're going to get footage from that. You won't get paid, but you'll get a SAG contract with a deferment on it. And then if you get into these films, you're going to have footage to put in your reel, footage to put up on Actors Access, footage that looks good. I mean, like you said, I've been doing this a long time, so I've got stuff on Actors Access, my demo stuff. But one of the best demos that I've got up on Actors Access is an AFI film that I did.
That's pretty awesome. I do want to talk about your one-man show and how you toured around, and talk a little about how you put that together. How many years was that? And you're the only person in the the whole show? No one else but you?
No, just me. I'm a member of the Television Academy. I vote for the Emmy. So I was at a Television Academy event, and my date said, oh, come here. I want you to meet my friend David. And she introduced me to David Castro, who had been a producer and writer on Married with Children. So I was immediately went, oh, wow, I'm not worthy to sit at your table. And I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, so the Southern started coming out while I was talking to him. And he goes, where? He was from the Bronx. We're talking, and he goes, where are you from? And I said, I was born in Arkansas, grew up in Alabama, went to Ole Miss for grad school, lived in Nashville for 5 years before I moved to Orlando. And then I moved here at the time, it was like 4 years ago. And he said, can you do an East Tennessee accent? And I said, I sure can all day long.
It's good.
And he said, I've been looking for you for 10 years. And I said, why? What are you doing? He said, I'm writing this show. I have a name for it. And I said, what's the show about? And he said, in 1916, the good people of Irwin, Tennessee lynched a circus elephant. And I said, I'm in. What do we do? And then he and I started meeting. About a week later, we had our first meeting, and he had developed each of these characters, and there are 10 different characters, 19 monologues, and we developed each character as we went. Well, there's the guy that, Charlie Sparks, the guy that owned the circus, who's also the ringmaster. There's a Southern Baptist minister, and there's a Hobo Joe, the clown. And there was a hunter named Jake Haskins, who's from East Tennessee. And, you know, there were all these different characters, and then each one of these was developed as a monologue, and I developed voices for each one of them in our meetings with David. And then at some point, I think probably 6 weeks into the process, I was like, oh my God, David, look, each one of these monologues is chronological. So we could break them into pieces and interweave them, which meant I'd change from character to character to character and tell each story along the way. And the final character at the end is Mary the Elephant herself, who has the last monologue. And we put the show together. It was one of the hardest things I ever did. I had this amazing line coach named Karen Liu, and it took me probably 6 weeks, it was probably more like 3, to get off the first monologue.
Wow.
It's just my brain was not used to doing it. And once I got the first monologue down, something clicked, and the second one was easy. Third one was even easier. And before I knew it, I was completely off book for this show, which is about 57 minutes long.
Wow.
And then we opened at the Fringe Festival in 2014 here in LA. We got full houses, sold out every show, got asked to come back for an extended run. We did the extended run. And then I went on the Canadian Fringe circuit to Toronto, Chicago. I did it in my hometown just on my own. And I did it in Orlando. And I did it here, third run, at another theater. So over a four-year period, I did the show 87 times, I think.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think the best one was I took it to New York for the Solo Fest, it's called. And we had sold-out houses off-Broadway in New York 2 nights in a row.
That's so great.
I felt like, okay, now I'm a real actor.
Exactly. That's real acting. That's real acting.
Well, what that did for me as an actor was it really boosted my confidence level. I highly recommend theater to anybody if you want to know what this business is supposed to feel like.
Yes.
But what would happen is I'd go off and do a run of the show. I'd come back, book a TV show, shoot it, leave, and go back. So I was on a roll there for a while because this business is like a roller coaster. It's up, it's down, it's up, it's down.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember, like I said, it's a marathon. Not a sprint, but it happens in bursts. It happens when you go on a roll, and then you can be quiet for sometimes a year or more. Well, I start to panic when I haven't worked in a while.
Yeah.
Well, I'm at a point now where I'm changing representation. I had a management company that didn't work out, and for a variety of reasons, I let them go. And right now, I've got a meeting with an agency that I've always wanted to be with since I moved here. I even found an email I sent them in 2013. But I highly recommend this. If you're looking for representation, and you're on Actors Access, there's a service they don't advertise a lot called Talent Link. And you go on Talent Link and you pay $35 and they will send your profile out to agents and management or whatever you're looking for representation in LA. And then they contact you. I was describing it to a friend. I said, it's like switching from Tinder to Bumble because the agent lets you know they're interested. And then you set up a meeting.
I like that.
So instead of sitting with your hat in your hand saying, you know, Mr. Agent, would you please represent me? It's the other way around. They go, we're interested in you. Can you come in and meet with us? And I would much rather be in that situation.
And if you could just do that and pay $35, that's amazing.
Well, you know, in the past, like when I first got here, I went onto IMDb Pro and I looked up the agents and I didn't pitch myself to the top 10. I did the next group down. And then I had this process where you pitch yourself to 10 agents, follow up 10 days later with a phone call to the agency. Did you get my pitch? production, they will or will not bring you in. But it's still you asking them to take you. Whereas you do the talent link thing, they contact you and say, we saw your stuff, we're interested. And I got 4 meetings out of it, and 2 of the management companies, I was like, no thanks. But 2 of the agencies I'm pretty interested in. But the main one is one I've been very interested in for many years. And if I can get with them, it's going to change 2020 for me for sure.
Awesome. You're going to get it. It's your time. Hey, so on your Internet Movie Database page, it goes from 1984 all the way till right now. I want to ask you, when you did a Problem Child 2, did you meet John Ritter?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I played a guy in line to get on a ride. And you remember there was a obnoxious kid that we all hated, and he goes under the ride and cranks the ride up to super fast. And I end up I end up vomiting with everybody else on this ride. But John Ritter, I had a scene with John Ritter just for a moment, just a brief moment. I spoke to him. I told him I thought he was amazing. I always loved Three's Company. And he was just a brilliant, really nice guy. He was nice to everybody around him. And there's nothing you can say bad about John Ritter.
Nuh-uh.
We didn't hang out or anything, but I got to be covered with fake vomit and work with John Ritter.
Right. A lot of people that I've talked to, they have some type of relationship with Tom Hanks. And you've actually, did you work with him? I saw that somewhere as well. Did you meet him?
Oh, my God. He directed me in an episode of a series called From the Earth to the Moon, which recently reran on HBO.
Nice.
And at the time, I was recurring on this show called Kenan and Kel. Some of you younger people may watch the show. I was Delivery Dave on Kenan and Kel. So I go into audition for Tom Hanks because he was directing the episode. I go into audition for him. I'm nervous. It's Tom Hanks, you know. And I come in and I sit down and he's looking at my resume and he goes, Kenan and Kel, you're on Kenan and Kel. And I said, yeah. He goes, do you know the guys? I could make some phone calls. Can you do that? That would be great. That would be great. You know, and after the audition, he talked about Kenan and Kel and how much his kids loved it. And he loved them, loved watching the show with his kids. And then he wanted to meet them. And I ended up after the show, I called the showrunner, who was a friend of mine, and tried to arrange a meeting. But I think their schedules never actually synced up. They were excited to meet him and he was excited to meet them. And that was really great. But the thing I remember most about the audition was at some point I said, do you have any way you want me to do this thing? I was reading for the head of McDonnell Aircraft. He said to me, which has stuck with me for years, he goes, you can do no wrong in this room. And that is a philosophy I try to carry into every audition with me. It's like, you make choices, you bring it, you do it strong, you be you, you can do no wrong in this room. And that was his attitude. It made me very comfortable.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, just being in the room with him. And at one point, we're sitting at Video Village. We're watching playback of the scene we just did. I'm sitting in a chair right behind Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks goes, turned around and sneezed right in my face. Tom Hanks sneezed in my face.
And you said, I'm never washing my face
again. I'm never washing my face again.
Right. So there's the canon. I'm just going to briefly just say some of your credits here. I mean, like the ER, Steve Harvey Show, Bad Boys 2, Transponder 2, Opportunity Knocks, Burn Notice, Criminal Minds. And you had, didn't you have a recurring part on Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah. I was the chief of detectives on Brooklyn Nine-Nine for season 3. And if you're listening out there, bring me back. I'd love to go back to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Thank you. Revenge, yeah.
Yeah, bringing back.
Yeah, I was the...
Yeah, Revenge. That was our favorite show. I love that show.
Yeah, I was chairman of the board of directors at the Southampton Medical Center. And I got to throw a $40 million check back in Victoria's face. That's great. You know, that show was a challenge because everybody spoke so softly. At the table read, I thought I was going deaf because everybody talked really like this, really low. Nobody spoke any louder than that. That's the kind of stuff I stress in my technology and minimalism class, is that the same thing that's happening to video has happened with audio as well. So you've got a lavalier microphone and a shotgun microphone, super sensitive, digital, very clean. You don't have to do anything with your voice other than speak in a nice low tone. And they took it to extremes on that show. When I was at the table read, I thought I was going deaf. Because everybody around the table is mumbling. And of course, when it came my time to speak, I'm not going to yell. I have to match that.
That's true.
So when I was on the set with Emily, we both spoke like this because there's no reason to speak any louder.
So wrapping up here, what else would you like to say? What advice do you have someone getting into this business, whether they're just starting out or now they're 50 years old and they're coming back into the business? What's your advice for them?
Well, you can't take it personally. And I do. Don't get me wrong. I've had despair moments where I just feel like I'm never going to make it. Nobody's ever going to notice me. I can't make my insurance. But the thing that keeps me going is bringing it back to making it about the work. It's about the work. We tell truths in fictional settings. And if you keep your heart in it, you keep your love in it, this work is its own reward. You want to feel good about what you do as an actor? Go do a play. Move people. Watch them cry. Watch them laugh. And if you want to be a mercenary about it, you can. And it's great to make a lot of money. And I love that. But it's not fair. I've had actors and actresses break down in my studio space and say, I don't know why I'm doing this. I spent all this money. I took all these classes. I paid for all this stuff. And I have to go, if it hurts this much, you don't have to do it. If you love it and you can't get away from it, make it about the work. Let the other stuff fall in place.
Right. So auditionsup.com, what is that? And what can an actor benefit from AuditionsUp?
AuditionsUp.com is my company now. It's also my website, and it's spelled just like it sounds, AuditionsUp.com. And everything we talked about as far as lighting and hardware and solutions and whatever is there. That's the site that I use. I tape auditions. You can get in touch with me from there. If you want to come in for a taping or a coaching session, I'll be happy to do that. All my rates and the location and all that stuff is there. There's also a lot of fee stuff on there. Like if you go to the solutions page, and there's demos on how to do stuff, tutorials on software and hardware. There's a tutorial on three-point lighting that explains it in every detail. There's also places that are linked to that you can go and do searches for S-Price on, smartphone adapters for tripod, lavalier microphones, shotgun microphones, different software and lighting equipment. So I've got links on there that you can click on. And here's the other thing. You heard me say this the other day, Johnny. You don't have to give me money to call me and ask me a question. And I don't mind hearing from people. I have people call me and go, should I buy this light or that light? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And if I'm available, you can call me. I'll be happy to talk.
That's awesome. So anything else you want to say in closing or wrapping up before we go?
No. Well, it was great meeting you the other day, man. And I was honored that you asked me to be on this. I went, of course, and listened to several of your podcasts and thought, yeah, I'd like to be in this company. That sounds great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for being my very special guest today. I really appreciate all your knowledge. And just thank you so much for being part of my show today. Bye-bye.
Well, I had a great time, man. See you later.
All right. Bye-bye, Tim.
Bye.
For more information on Tim, just go to TimPowell.com, TimPowell.com, or AuditionsUp, that's auditions with an S, AuditionsUp.com. I got a request last week for a self-tape. I listened to everything Tim said. I went in there and shot it. I still had a few little shadows. I went to his website, clicked on the link about three-point lighting, made one little adjustment. All the shadows went away. It was perfect the first time. So thank you, Tim. That was really some great advice. So wherever you're listening to Actors 2020 podcast, we'd appreciate if you would leave a comment and give us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Actors 2020 podcast. I'm Johnny Keith, your host. Now we're going to end this episode like we end every episode with something called The Lesson. Because life is a bitch. Gee, really? Why don't you tell me something I don't already know? Because everywhere I go, people tell me what to do. Hey, go to church, go to school, you treat me like a fool. Now, I don't need religion, culture, class. You don't like that fact? Well, you can kiss my ass. Yeah, I'm white and I rap. You got a problem with that? Loosen up and don't be so uptight. Take it easy, E. We got the whole night. Yes, I'm psyched. I'm ready to get the show on the road. I don't want to stop because I just might explode. I'll tell you what, home slice, I'm twice as nice than any bad boy rapper called Vanilla Ice. My lesson, yeah, it's hip. In case you didn't know what I'm here to inform ya, I'm better than snow. I don't moonwalk or dunk like these Michael J's, but I can hold my own. You hear what I say? Now listen, learn, cause here comes the lesson. Lesson one. Everybody sit down, JK is gonna take you for a ride uptown. Yo, this is the story of the Hollywood game. Choose your path careful, you're the only one to blame. Now when it comes to pot, crack, tweak, or blow, stick to the rules and just say no. Because you're young, you're eager, you want in the movies. Don't think you'll get there by giving up the booty, cause they'll use you, abuse you, throw you out like trash. And then you'll discover that you're out of cash. Now your heart, your soul is somewhere on the shelf, and you're walking through the streets now talking to yourself. The lesson, Well, you heard lesson one, it's time for lesson two. You have a choice, and the choice is up to you. I came to Hollywood to be a rich and famous star, but for now I'm waiting tables and I'm tending someone's bar. Pictures, classes, agents, where the hell does it all end? Every time I turn around, I'm starting over again. I finally got a break with a five line and under. My life was starting to roar like lightning and thunder. The phone rings, hello, I'm cast in a pilot. My life spun out of control just like an LA riot. I walked off the set, said to hell with this old man. The phone's not even ringing and my life is in the can. The lesson. Yeah, final lesson here, of course it's number three. Now remember, I'm an actor to be or not to be. When the going got tough, I climbed into the bottle. I'm back on my feet now, revving my throttle on the climb to the top. It's the same old games. Now I'm kicking ass and I'm taking some names. Clawing, scraping, screaming, that was a long, hard crawl. But it was all worth it, I'm a box office draw. Opportunity was there when I took it with a punch. Not now, baby, but let's do lunch. There's a big piece of pie and you should grab your portion. You can be like me, enjoying fame and fortune. Boom! That's the lesson. Go and learn it. It's the lesson. Go and learn it. It's the lesson. Peace out. Thank you for tuning in to Actors 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith. Until the next episode, bye-bye.